We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In 2008, I stopped dyeing my hair. And I really enjoyed it, having salt and pepper hair and then streaks, especially in the beauty space, was really rare. I was on social media and I was watching a lot of women, and you may have noticed a lot of women stopped dyeing their hair. Well, partially because they couldn't get to the salons, but a huge number of those women decided to keep their silver hair. I saw women asking each other, like, now what? Now what do I do? You know, what do I do about my eyebrows? What shade should they be? Why is my hair turning yellow? Like, all of the questions that I'd already dealt with, you know, in 2008. And from 2008 to 2020, I realized there weren't any products. I realized that we need more. I thought it should be somebody who has silver hair, because there's this particular perspective that you have, an understanding of the needs. So that's how I ended up kind of starting a beauty business that celebrates and amplifies the beauty of silvering hair.
I'm Jari Bolander, and welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. This podcast is all about how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world through educating and inspiring the next generation of entrepreneur through powerful storytelling. Let's get started. Alexis Asianis, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Being on the program, you are founder of Silvery, which is a very interesting company that we're going to get to in a second. Mm-hmm. But like I always like to say, you know, I'm a lazy. I only have really one question, and that is, tell us how you got to do what you're doing today.
So yes, hello, and thank you for having me on your show. And we were talking earlier, and I just wanted to bring up that I'm nervous and not a great speaker at these things, but I'm going to try my best. So how did I end up where I ended up? Is this kind of the question? So I found a hole in the beauty market by basically falling into it. I've been 30 years working behind the scenes in beauty, first as an international fashion model, but geez, that was a very long time ago. And then for 20 years as an industrial designer and creative director in the beauty marketing space. So in that position, in that role, just about every product crossed my desk. And in 2008, I stopped dyeing my hair. And it's a lot of women, you know, when they're pregnant, they choose to stop dyeing their hair. And I really enjoyed it, having salt and pepper hair and then streaks, especially in the beauty space, was really rare. And I used it kind of as a calling card, you know, and I loved it. I loved how it made me feel. I loved how it gave me a little bit of a distinction in the beauty space. But then smash cut to COVID. You remember COVID? Are we still in it? I don't know.
Feels sometimes that way, right?
I know. Crazy. Am I wearing a mask?
Yeah.
What's happening? Hold on. We're in a video meeting again. So I, like many other, like everybody, was working from home, and I was on social media, and I was watching a lot of women, and you may have noticed, a lot of women stopped dyeing their hair. Well, partially because they couldn't get to the salons, but a huge number of those women decided to keep their silver hair. And there's good reason for that, because it feels amazing. The amount of money and freedom that it affords you is spectacular, and never mind the health benefits. But here's what I noticed. on the socials, I saw women asking each other, like, now what? Now what do I do? You know, what do I do about my eyebrows? What shade should they be? Why is my hair turning yellow? Like, all of the questions that I had already dealt with, you know, in 2008. And from 2008 to 2020, I realized there weren't any products. I had to compromise. The beauty industry believed that women with silver hair just need purple shampoo. That's it. Thank you. Good luck. You know, get your prescription, use it twice a month. You're good to go. And being in beauty and wanting to look chic and put together, I realized that we need more. We need more. So having a look in the beauty space, I was very aware that something needed to be done. Something needed to be done, and somebody should do something about this. And, you know, introspection, like, who should do this? Who should do this? Who should take on this monumental task? And I thought it should be somebody who has silver hair, because there's this particular perspective that you have, an understanding of the needs. It should be somebody who understands beauty, and somebody who has the connections in the beauty industry. And I was like, hold on a second.
This sounds an awful lot like you.
I know. This might be me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's how I ended up kind of starting a beauty business that celebrates and amplifies the beauty of silvering hair with cosmetics and hair care products formulated specifically for women with silvering hair.
Wow.
It's been amazing. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Man.
Thanks.
The only other woman that I've seen of prominence with like a silver streak in her hair was the co-host of Project Runway, which I don't remember her name off the top of my head.
Project Runway.
Yeah, with Tim Gunn was on it, and Heidi Klum. I think it was, I don't remember her name, but I used to watch that show a lot, not because I'm big into fashion, which is surprising for someone like me, but I just love, I love the creativity of just on a deadline. Like, I don't know how long they actually had to make this stuff, but oh my gosh. Like,
I think with being in the creative space, like full stop, I can tell you, even as a designer, you get paid to be given a task and locked in a room basically and like, be creative, do something with this. And I think that's, you know, for entrepreneurs, it's a great skill to have is being able to synergize. So taking information from multiple places and bringing them together to create a solution that's win-win-win. And that's in kind of design thinking. It's kind of what you're trained in as a designer. And it's one of the tools in the tool belt that kind of I didn't realize was going to be helpful.
Well, I mean, I think what's interesting about what you've done is you were seeing intersections and things, there were gaps, right? And for me, what I've always found is that like innovation and creativity pull together at the intersection where things don't work, right? They're like just not there. So
100%. That's how that is innovation. Innovation is something new, right? In order to create something new, you've got to, it's not necessarily, and you have a tech background, but you'll probably appreciate this. It's not like you start from nothing and come up with a wheel. You start with kind of nothing and then a strange shape that's kind of roundish. And then it gets a little bit rounder. But that's trial and error and mixing ideas. And you have to have kind of an open mind to different ideas to, again, synergize them and see like, something could work with this, could work with that. It's never been done before, but let's give it a try and see what happens.
Yeah, I like the idea of the mixing ideas because so what I do for my day job, as most people know, is I do sales and marketing consulting for B2B companies. And one of the things I've found in B2B's business to business space is there's usually a pretty defined need. And they sort of wander their way into, you know, the actual fulfilling the problem or solving the problem or creating the opportunity. But then what's fascinating, I don't know, maybe it's just perspective or maybe it's just focus, they don't see where they like it overlaps other things, right? Mm-hmm. And I was in the digital health space, and digital health, this is before COVID, they weren't applying technology to the healthcare space. And you're thinking like, why not? And it was the siloed thinking, the we've done it this way forever, the a lack of creativity. And it's traditionally like, don't want to be really that creative in the healthcare. Like, I just don't want to die, right? But I think what's interesting about like your experience, and which I think a lot of entrepreneurs see, which is really nice that you brought up the lineage of it, is that you're seeing all of these things. You're seeing no pattern that meets the needs that you have, that you've established early on. And you're like, why not?
That's right.
And yeah. That's where all the, I think it's where the genius comes from, right?
Oh, yes, genius. That's the word I was hoping you would use.
Our genius.
No.
No, we can use another word if you want.
No, but I think that's the spark of ideas, right? And that's, I don't know, I believe that, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier, how you've got a background in multiple disciplines. And I think that's really valuable. I think the more things you're exposed to, the more kind of paint colors you have in your palette, you know, to create a beautiful picture, and or to mix into unique colors that didn't exist before. Do you, you know, I'm going to go into all kinds of analogies that are terrible.
Well, no, it's a good, well, it's a good metaphor because people can understand what the metaphor, like, I think the thing that's interesting is that, you know, the mixing, the different overlaps, the boundary. I mean, as an engineer, we call them boundary conditions. Like everything breaks at the boundary.
Yeah.
It's the way life is.
It's funny. What we used to say in design is like, it's where two elements meet. That's where the magic happens. And exactly. It's like, if you've got two elements and they're kind of like rub up against each other, and unless it's purposeful friction, it's like, oh, you know, that's where it make something's made or broken. Yeah. Go ahead. I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No. I like the fact that the design discipline has the same thing. Cause in engineering, what I always found about engineering is like practical design, right? Like doesn't really has to perform the function. And if it's aesthetically pleasing, that's a bonus. Like, no. Does it get the job done, right? And what's interesting about art, design, engineering, math, and science, there is a part of creativity in each one of them. I mean, writing too, anything, any of the creative act.
Absolutely.
Because you're making something from nothing. Yeah, that's hard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Did you have a lot of entrepreneurial experience before Silverina or no?
I mean... Very loosely, I could call some of my past exploits entrepreneurial, but no, I was very lucky that in my past role, I was 20 years in with a company, which is rare enough, but I was given a real intrapreneurial role. I was given the ability to kind of work within the design and engineering groups to really create roles, to create new roles, to create kind of different ways of working. And yeah, so I knew I could, you know, I could put things together. I could lay out a plan and actuate it. I have the skills, and those skills were kind of honed in a safer environment, we'll say. Yeah, and I'll say that like I was creative director, but my background's in industrial design. So industrial design is like, again, it's this beautiful mix of understanding how much something needs to cost, what materials are made of, production techniques, you know, mass production versus smaller run production, where the sweet spots are, and then throwing in the aesthetic on top of it. And that's what I mean, like finding that win that's going to be a win-win-win and synergizing that information is anyway, I feel like most of the entrepreneurs that I've met have had some similar story. You know, that they're like, well, I couldn't find it, so I'll make it. Find a need and fill it. But also that most of the entrepreneurs, and you, I mean, you can probably attest to this, have had a background in some way that prepared them for their next role. And I think that's kind of how again, I fell into it. I fell into it, glad to be here. This hole is lovely.
Yeah. No, you're right. Usually there's either some need or some like puzzlement as to like, why didn't anyone create this before? And then they launch off into the wild blue yonder, you know, it's like, oh, this is harder than I thought. What was it harder than you thought? Or
it was, I have nothing to compare it to. Like I can say that I had probably unique challenges being in lockdown and not being able to travel to the manufacturers and having to build a brand from a home office, not just during COVID, but during some hormonal changes that come with being in your midlife as a woman next to a 15-year-old, my child, who is sitting next to me in the office, who's going through his own hormonal changes. Like there was flux. There was just like a lot of stress in the world. So I can't say that part of the experience is something that you're going to find common to anybody. But I figure if I could get through those challenges and kind of make the brand happen, man, the rest is going to be easy.
Yeah, I'd probably agree. It's easier anyway. I mean, yeah, everything has its different challenges. So, I mean, it's interesting, like going through COVID and on the lockdown and then creating this brand new company, brand new product line, not being able to go to the manufacturer. Like one of the things when I was making computer chips that I always found, because one of my jobs was to make sure we could manufacture millions of them, was there's nothing like going to the factory. Like the factory just felt like, God, I can't believe they're making my thing.
That is the best. Yeah. So yeah, like in my previous role, we were attached to the manufacturing plant and we visited all the plants all over the world. And that is, there's a great feeling with that. There's also like a learning and an understanding. And if you're full of questions, the best way to answer them is to be on site. But I have to say that technology, again, was, I think, part of what was really fortunate for me was that I had like the idea, but I also had the timing and the technology that was ready for it to happen. Mm. So that it enabled me to be able to create this company on a really shoestring budget and through the computer and to like, gosh, if we didn't have Zoom, I couldn't have meetings with the manufacturers. Do you know what I mean? Like even was just like, okay, that wouldn't have been an option. The fact that we have the website creators that are like the website platforms that we have now. I designed websites before things like Wix and Shopify existed. And it's crazy expensive. It's work that goes into it and any kind of adjustment. And the fact that all of that is dead easy now, comparatively speaking, and that all of the functionality they have has been streamlined and locked down and is secure and safe. So to create a shopping platform is now very quite straightforward. And then the integrations, you know, all of those integrations. So my CPA talks to, like everything talks to everything. So you can actually have one location of truth and like right from the beginning.
Yeah.
And that's incredible. It's just incredible. And it just, again, the idea was there, but in order to facilitate the idea, the timing was right. The timing was really right.
Yeah. And like 10 years ago, that you could not have done this.
Exactly.
That's the thing.
Exactly.
That's amazing how quickly, you know, like Shopify, like you mentioned.
Yeah. And even considering my market, right? So I'm direct to consumer.
Yeah.
And without COVID, a lot of my customer base, they wouldn't have been shopping online, right?
Right. Yeah, good
this
point.
Like shopping online became a thing and it opened up a whole new, like just different opportunities, right? So I can't express enough that the timing, the technology were paramount in our success.
Yeah, especially, I mean, I didn't think about the kind of acceleration during COVID, just the acceleration of different lifestyle, just your point about like, can't dye my hair anymore. Now what? And you're like, oh, this is empowering. I would never have tried this because societal frame is this flavor of beauty, but now I'm experiencing a different thing. I remember, I mean, even cutting your hair, like I had to get my fiance Minerva to like buzz my head because I couldn't go to the barber. And I'm like, oh, this looks really horrible, but
then you appreciate barbers.
Well, barbers are essential in my opinion.
Yeah.
but you also realize you're like, but everyone else is in that same position. So now societal norms have shifted, you know, remote work. You know, what you're talking about and the silvering and natural beauty and all that is, I think, just got amplified and escalated because of necessity. You couldn't do the normal stuff.
And that's kind of how it started. And it's a ball that gets rolling, but boy, is it ever picking up speed. The average age that women start to silver is 35. Yeah, you'd think it's like 90 based on need, right? No. And more and more, you have to think that and you're in marketing, so you'll understand this. The largest kind of beast of a market, generational market, were the millennials. And everybody, you know, kowtowed to the millennials, and the poor millennials, they've suffered because of the size of their cohort. But they're an important buying base. Now, the millennial women, they were responsible for a lot of the changes that I've seen in beauty. So a lot of the changes in expecting businesses to be transparent, clean, eco-conscious, giving back to the community, all of these that we now consider table stakes if you're going to be starting a business, started with the millennials. So now you think the millennials, the median age of the millennial right now is 35.
Really?
And they're at a point now where they're a very particular, I'm not going to make one big sweeping statement, but they're...
No, you can. I make it all the time.
No, I don't let it.
I always say like the millennial boomer snowflakes because I'm Gen X. So I'm just a curmudgeon.
I'm Gen X too.
Yeah. So we can say that. They're okay. They're not really that. Well, they're really not that much snowflakes. And if they take our jokes so seriously, then they are snowflakes.
No. I think they're really important, and they've made some really incredible changes. And I find that's very interesting. Like to look at and look backwards as a woman, because growing up as a woman, the expectations and the societal expectations were, and when you talk about beauty. Who dictated beauty? It was the magazine. A magazine told you what was considered beautiful. And now it's the consumer talking to the brands and they're dictating. Yeah. So these consumers, and we're going to talk about the millennials just for a little bit more. They, as kind of as a group, are a lot, they lean a lot more into being authentic.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're coming up against that. Here's this friction point. They're coming up the societal norms of silvering hair. What do I do? So if you're a woman, you understand that yes, coloring your hair is lots of fun when you're a kid. You know, you're like, I'm blonde, I'm purple, I'm blue. But then something happens when you start chasing your roots. You know, it's like, oh, that white hair. Oh, what do I
gasp? I love that, chasing your roots. That
And it becomes like, oh, there, I have to stop that. And that's problematic. And I find that's probably not I think it's problematic for women because we are and have always been expected to kind of fit into this Iron Maiden of like maybe a 30-year-old, you know, and aspiring. I mean, think of the word aspiring to be 30 and to be younger. And ask any woman who's grown up. The level, the things that come with growing up, the wisdom that you attain, the confidence, the insecurities that peel off with every day. These are amazing things. And why would we hide that? So that's part of what we're trying to do with the brand is just by being, it shows and it validates that you don't have to dye your hair. Silvering naturally is a perfectly viable option. If you want to dye your hair, amazing. That's cool. But without beauty products on the market for silvering hair, it implies that it's less than beautiful. Right. And it's just not true.
Yeah. I mean, you know, men for decades, let it silver. I let it silver.
Beard.
Yeah, you see a little. Yeah, that's why I've got the wisdom. It's got the gray here and then the blonde hair.
There's an association with seasoned expertise when it's on a man, and with women, especially in the workplace, like that's just another place where my brand kind of, here's another place where we can kind of resonate, is that it's difficult for women in the workplace. It really is. I mean, there's the ideas around ageism.
Sexism.
Sexism and ageism.
Yeah.
All wrapped up into a beautiful thing. Yeah. So part of what we do is like give women the tools to like amplify the beauty, of their hair. And their hair is something that represents something so meaningful. It kind of augments confidence and allows them to show up authentically and be confident in that.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is, it's like, I think what's interesting is that it just appears, again, what do I know? I'm not a woman, so this doesn't affect me as much, but that you're like doing it right. And what I mean by doing it right is that you are taking the same care, consideration, and thoughtfulness of a traditional, I say traditional, but probably not the right word, line of hair care products, but then amplifying them for this natural process that's has beauty and wisdom, and it's just what it is. Whereas traditionally, I think a lot of times that has not been taken seriously. So therefore the products, the solution, like it didn't look good. Like, what did you say? It was like the blue haired old ladies. You're like,
right.
You know, like that's right. Not healthy because they're trying, you know, anyway. So
yeah,
I just think it's interesting to take the same thoughtful approach and apply
it's beauty.
Yeah.
Like it is a beauty product. And I think it's interesting that the in the beauty space right now, you've got a lot of beauty brands and retailers who are, you know, trying to be pro-age, right?
Yeah.
And doing their best to use that language, but at the other side of their mouth, you know, pitching the wrinkle creams. And you're like, well, you know, do as I say, not as I do. And there's a lot of contradiction there. Yeah. And I feel like we deserve better. Like we just deserve better. And I think growing up is a wonderful thing. And it can look fantastic. Like, no.
Yeah.
Well, fairly simple.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a little easier to maintain.
It's easier to maintain. But here's the thing, Jerry, I've got to tell you, there's this idea that if you stop dyeing your hair, you're leaving beauty behind.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I'm choosing to not put carcinogenic chemicals on my head.
Yeah.
And spend heaps of money and time that is unnecessary, you know, but it's realizing that it's unnecessary. Yeah. We're not leaving beauty behind. Like there's a difference. You know, I think there are some women who are going natural because they want to go natural. And then there are some women who are chic as anything. And in fact, it's still fashion and fabulous is still fabulous. You just don't need dye to be it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you also see even in men's beauty products, which is lately I've seen more and more of what would have been traditionally a woman product, women's products being applied to men, you know, just for men. I mean, they always had that, but like the wrinkle things under the eyes, the whole thing where I don't think it's ever going to get to the point of societal norms for women. You know, hopefully they'll both converge and it'll just be like, you do you, and beauty is this holistic thing that you can pick. You know what I mean? But
there's nothing wrong with decoration. I have to say, like, and wanting to show up and be fabulous. Like there's nothing wrong with that. How you choose to do it is how you choose to do it. And we're just here to make sure that there's an option present that's a valid and supported option in the beauty space.
Yeah.
Men, women, do you. Like amazing. And the more options there are that are considered okay, like the better. It just let people be and support them.
Yeah.
Like, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. No, I will admit that millennials are the ones driving that, I think, more so than past generations.
Yeah. And, you know, as a Gen Xer, you can really see the difference between these age groups. And they're driven by all kinds of things, but they're driven by history and circumstance and where you live and, you know, what happened. And it's that's fine. That's fine. There's no judgment. And I don't like to give the big sweeping.
Because everyone's individual, right?
But you're within a group. And I feel like generation after generation, especially for women, it's getting a little bit easier. Not a lot, but it's getting easier. It's getting easier. And I thank my lucky stars that I'm in Canada in 2024 as a woman. Like that's a very, very privileged place to be. And I acknowledge it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think directionally, I mean, what's interesting is there's been we talked before about how we wish we could have dialogue and conversation about anything, right? Politics, et cetera, right?
Yeah,
because it's been so polarized, and I'm sure it's the same way in fashion and beauty. There's the dominant narrative. There's the beauty industrial complex, for lack of a better word, that has a vested interest in the status quo. But I think having the conversation and exploring just different ways. I mean, you know, again, because you see this more and more. And I think because of social media and because of how social media is going to change in the next couple of years, because it's a lot of net negative on that. And you just start to see that hopefully we're going to start becoming a little more compassionate to each other, but also realizing the natural distinction is the strength, and that we should be judged by who we are, not what we look like. I mean, you know, Martin Luther King said, "Content of your character, not the color of your skin." But you could see that it went one way really hard. It's kind of coming back, and I think it'll sort of gravitate.
The beauty industry is probably one of the most inclusive industries out there. And you can see there's movement already, but there's the movement's huge. I mean, I've been able to see this over the past 30 years, the changes, just the number of foundation colors alone, the hair care, you know, the diversity in hair care. And never mind the visuals, right? Like there are models of all different sizes, shapes, and they're starting to bring in some older models. But boy, it's just starting. Like it's just starting. And I think there's a difference between, you know, trotting somebody out for a picture and providing products for that person, you know? But it's a change. It's a change, and it's moving forward, and I'm here for it, and I'm rooting for it. Yeah. And the beauty business really is, it's inclusive. And it tries its best to be inclusive. And I think they see the value in that, and they see the value in people wanting to be individual and encouraging individuality through cosmetics.
Like how you express yourself.
Tricky. As a form of expression, like you were talking about earlier, fashion, fashion is just something you put on your body. And style, and like how you wear it, is your individuality. It's a solid industry. It is a solid industry, but it's got a lot of baggage.
Like a lot of things.
Like a lot of things.
Like a lot of society has got baggage.
Yeah.
So do you think you're at the forefront of this? Is there other companies that are sort of kind of along with the ride? You're it.
I'm it. I'm the only vertical in the beauty market right now doing what we're doing.
Wow.
I know.
Tell anyone.
The opportunity. But I have to say, we're doing it well, and we're doing it responsibly. We're doing it ethically, made in Canada, you know, avoiding plastics. I have to say, because I was in the manufacturing world, I see very, very clearly the problems with disposable things. And, you know, if you're an environmentalist at all, you kind of wonder, does the world need another beauty brand? Come on. And then it's like, well, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it well. And we're going to do it in a way that we can sleep at night. I know even just starting the business, you always, and as an entrepreneur, seriously, you know that money is important because you've got loans out the wazoo. And every decision, you know, there's an angel on one shoulder and a devil on the other. And there's a quick, cheap way to do it, which there's so many compromises that you make, or there's the right way to do it. And you're faced with that often, like just even starting, where do you incorporate in Delaware? They have no taxes. And I'm just like, oh, I live in Canada where we have a fantastic educational system, healthcare system, good roads mostly. And I benefit from those. So why would I incorporate my company in this country? No.
Yeah. No, I get it.
Which side?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's choices that you make.
And you have, it's a responsibility. You know, I really believe it's a responsibility. I believe when industry started, you know, the great barons of industry, when starting companies was considered like a social benefit because you're employing people and you're adding to the productivity of a nation or a city or a town.
Yeah.
And I feel like some aspect of that responsibility, that sense of responsibility has disappeared.
I would agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it started in the 80s with MBA curriculum, Milton Friedman's famous paper on maximizing shareholder wealth.
Really maximizing
did.
The shareholders.
Yeah. Changed. Yeah. Before then, and I don't probably got the dates wrong, but before then, you're right.
I think it was Reaganomics. I think that was.
Yeah. He was before. Helpful. It was a little bit before. Right? But yeah, the supply side. And it gets a little more complicated on the economic side, but the main thrust that people were learning in MBA school was your job as management is to maximize shareholder wealth and quote unquote, the rest takes care of itself. Whereas before there was more of a ethical responsibility to make stakeholders in the entire ecosystem a little more like you had to kind of consider it. And, you know, yeah, there were robber barons like, look, capitalism, albeit imperfect, is probably one of the best systems because it corrects itself. And we're seeing that correction. Mm-hmm. Like you're making choices. Mm-hmm. Other people, there's B corporations now, there's lots of activity and it takes time to move that paradigm, but it starts with what you're taught in MBA school. It's because what they were taught. So I mean, MBA school, that's what we taught.
Yeah.
You had to break the frame and hard to do when the predominant narrative is go, 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 you know, the cocaine fueled 80s, you know, greed is good kind of thing, you know.
Greed is good. Yeah.
Changing. It's totally changing. And it's entrepreneurs like you who like, there's a better way. I mean, even with your product, there's a better way. Like you're finding a need, filling it ethically, responsibly, and profitably, we hope.
Profitably. Yeah. I mean, we hope profitability after the third month. There's no doubt. I mean, when there's a hole in the market, there's a hole in the market.
Yeah.
It's again, it's one of these win-win-win situations. You know, you're kind of looking for ways to create something that satisfies lots of different aspects, synergizing them into something going to work.
Cool.
And that's, I feel like that's what we've done. And we'll see how we grow. And I'm going to throw in the mission. We've talked about the brand's mission. And it's important because it's to change the way that all women see silvering hair, to see it as aspirational and chic. Now, I say that because it's an important part of the brand that is longer term thinking, you know, and it's not now, it's for generations to come. And I think if you know, for entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs to be, if you can find a mission that you can use to filter all of your decisions, that validates all of your decisions, there's something that's very positive and satisfying and kind of blissful about that, you know? Like you can actually have a job that difficult, but you can enjoy doing and you can feel really good about it at the end of the day. And it's not just a dollar sign. It's knowing that you're making a change.
Yeah.
That's very satisfying.
Yeah. It gets you through the dark times.
Doesn't it though? Yes, and there are dark times. It's not all rainbows and ponies.
And unicorns and even, all that sort of stuff.
They're nice.
Those are nice, but.
Poop. Yeah. Gotta do it those days.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat. I wish you just the best of luck. What a great idea. And just, you know what I mean? Like, obvious.
Right? There's a paperclip here.
Yeah.
And it's funny because there's like when I started doing the research into the formulations and trying to figure out why are there no products that are working? It's because there's a whole industry that wasn't seeing us. You know, if you believe that women are going to be coloring their hair, you're not making products that work for their hair. Like you're not testing them. You're not making sure that the ingredients don't show up. Like it's like wearing a white t-shirt. You know, anything that you spill on it, like it shows up.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. It's really remarkable. But to see a group of women is amazing. And it's not just like the number of women it's staggering. It's staggering how many women are silvering proudly and looking for their products.
Yeah. That's part of natural part of life. Thanks so much again. Yeah.
Thanks, great Jerry. Thanks for having me.
Of course, anytime. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA, and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.